Izamit Carr, and I'm Telly Concepcion, and together we are Beyond the Numbers Podcast. We go beyond the numbers of sports and life to bring you the story within the story of the stories that matter. So come learn, grow, and have some fun with us. We are Beyond the Numbers Podcast.
On today's episode, the guys discuss Patrick Mahomes' major $500 million deal and its implications on the NFL and future quarterback deals. And on the 10-year anniversary of the decision, they discuss Don Bonatta Jr.'s backstory, the decision, LeBron deciding to broadcast taking his talents to South Beach, the origin, the backlash, and the change it's caused in the sports landscape. But first, their numbers of the day.
My number of the day is 9, as in 9 years ago today, today being July 8th, Mike Trout was called up to the show and to become a legend already in the past 9 years in the MLB. Since he was called up 9 years ago, he has made it to 8 All-Star games, only missing it once so far. So I'm pretty excited to see what the next 9 years have in store for him.
My number for the day is $100 million. Streaming giant Netflix is depositing $100 million of cash on hand in Black-owned banks. The company says Black-owned financial institutions have a harder time accessing capital and that the move should help the banks lend more to their communities. It's crazy, Amit. There are only 21 Black-owned banks in the United States. And as of 2018, there's 4,708 banks in the U.S. They're predominantly located in communities of color. Not having the deposits that other banks do limits the amount of lending activity and community investments that banks can do. So this is huge. Also, Reed Hastings, CEO of Netflix, and his wife, philanthropist Patty Quillen, personally made the single largest individual donation to fund student scholarships at HBCUs. The two are donating $120 million in support of student scholarships, dividing it into $40 million each for Morehouse College, Spelman College, and the United Negro College Fund.
Before the business. Beyonders, it's time for Before the Business, where we answer your unanswered questions and find the numbers that went unfound in previous episodes.
We had some things happen this week, Amit. Last week, we told you about Dak Prescott and the Dallas Cowboys contract negotiations. We ended the piece by saying, good luck, Jerry, because the market could be reset by one Patrick Mahomes or Deshaun Watson. Well, Jerry Jones, we tried to tell you, Patrick Mahomes just got paid. And we'll talk about it in segment one. That's called a teaser.
And you know, Telly, today I have got a piece to talk about before the business.
Before the business.
So we ragged a little bit on my man Fitzmagic, Ryan Fitzpatrick, right? We gave him a little bit of hard times when we were talking about Colin Kaepernick, but could his career actually be a little more impressive than you and I and probably most football fans ever realized? So, we went into the numbers. My man has more passing yards than Kurt Warner, who had 32,344 passing yards. Fitz, 32,886. He has more passing touchdowns than the New York Giants' great Phil Sims. Sims had 199, Fitz has 210. He has a higher career passer rating than John Elway. The John Elway had a 79.9 career passer rating, Fitz 81.6. He had a lower interception rate than Broadway Joe Namath. Namath had a 5.8% interception rate. Fitzmagic, 3.4%. And Last but not least, higher completion rate than Dan freaking Marino. 59.4% completion rate for Dan. Fitzmagic, 60.3. What, Telly? What is that?
I got no further questions for this guy in honor of our favorite movie. Is it possible? Do the laws of physics cease to exist in our research?
Clearly.
About Fitz? Bow down. We got to take a step back. We got to own our mistake. We were ragging on him. He is a Harvard man. You know, he's a Harvard man. He's a Crimson man. He might know what he's doing, Amit. I'm just saying, he might know what he's doing.
Fitz, longtime listener, I know you've been tuning in. We got you. I see your numbers. I'm sorry. You're the man. Keep at it, son.
Yes, and our last bit, the team from Washington, D.C. is changing its name. Finally, we say make it the Red Tails, Amit. Beyond the Numbers podcast is officially endorsing Red Tails. The Red Tails nickname was used by the Tuskegee Airmen, the nation's first African-American aerial combat unit who broke the color barrier during World War II. So that would honor some of our soldiers, and located in D.C., I think it's appropriate. It also allows them to keep the same or a similar color scheme.
I'm all for it. Washington Red Tails, great movie, great name for a team out of D.C.
For our first story, Amit, show me the money. It's not show me the money, Amit. The money has been shown to Patrick Mahomes.
Oh, yeah.
That's my Mahomie now. That's everybody's Mahomie, like they say in the Allstate commercial. Number for this story, Amit, it's pretty easy. It's $503 million, which is the total contract, including all the incentives. Based on a full season average from the past two seasons, Patrick Mahomes will make around $650,000 per quarter, $76,000 per pass attempt, $41,000 per snap.
Not too shabby, my friend. Not too shabby.
For it's those almost baseball you... money.
almost. For those of you that don't know, Patrick Mahomes is getting paid, as Telly just pointed out in the numbers. He signed a 10-year contract for $450 million, which can go up to a total of 12 years, worth $503 million, including various incentives. This is the largest contract in American sports history.
Yeah, North American sports, right? I don't know, some soccer players out there making that bank. But I think before we get into this, this is very exciting news. Very, very fortunate to talk about this. I have to include a disclaimer on it. For the average American out there that listens to our show, and there's people abroad that listen to our show as well, the average American makes $59,039 per year on average. We would all take this deal, so I don't want this to get misconstrued. Also, I think if they made athletes work a regular job, first, no one would ever complain about being an athlete, I think, and no one would ever get in trouble, because once you grind, okay, and you do regular work, you're definitely not trying to get in trouble, suspended, or step out of line in any kind of way. My opinions. There's a couple things about this deal I wanted to highlight. The total, the length, and the average total of the deal. The previous largest dollar amount on the NFL contract. I don't even know if I can get this out. But the previous largest amount for NFL contract was only, quote unquote, only $150 million. This deal is for $503 million. Matt Ryan was awarded a five-year contract for $150 million. The length of this deal, there's only been six contracts in NFL history for 10 or more years, okay? So the others, a Packer for life, Brett Favre was offered a 10-year, $100 million deal from the Green Bay Packers. We know that didn't work out. Drew Bledsoe was offered a 10-year, $103 million contract by the New England Patriots. He was hurt 7 months later and replaced by a guy named Thomas Brady. I don't know if anybody's heard of that guy. Dante Culpepper was given a 10-year, $102 million deal by the Vikings in 2003. Mike Vick was given a 10-year deal, $130 million in 2004 by the Atlanta Falcons. And the longest contract in NFL history, any guesses? Do you know who owns this contract and this record?
I don't know.
So the person that owns the longest contract in NFL history was also done by a man named Andy Reid, coach of Patrick Mahomes. 12-year, $150 million contract they gave to Donovan McNabb in 2002 with the Philadelphia Eagles.
150.
That is the longest contract in NFL history.
150 or 115?
115. 115. Apologize if I misspoke. 12 years, $115 million. Now, there is a contract that's a little bit longer. Someone you may know, his name is Steve Young, played for the San Francisco 49ers. Before he got that gig, he played for the USFL. For our younger listeners, you may not know what that is, but it was a new league, football league. And they offered Steve Young a 43-year deal. We will not get into on this show, but just wanted to let y'all know. And finally, the average of this deal, Amit. The current highest yearly average for an NFL player is Russell Wilson. He's making $35 million a year. This deal will put Patrick Mahomes at $45 million a year, beating Russell Wilson's amount by $10 million. And still really, though, only putting him middle, like top-tier NBA player. There's still NBA guys getting more than that. A topic for another show. But my initial thoughts on it, amazing deal, $500 million. There's no way you can complain, right? But also, looking at the details, it's a very team-friendly deal because they're locking him in for such a long time. He's only 24 years old. You're getting the best player in the game for 10 years, for almost 12 years. How long will he be the highest paid is the question that came up in my mind. It might be a potential Scottie Pippen situation we've talked about in previous episodes where he was offered a long-term deal. Sounded like a lot of money at the time, but as the years progressed, wasn't a lot of money. Also, remember, Magic Johnson once signed a quote on a lifetime deal with the Lakers. You know what that was for? 25 years, $25 million. I mean, even saying it now is like, really? Lifetime deal? And that was quickly outdated when the TV revenues increased for the NBA. And I'll leave a pin in my points there and we'll come back to that. In addition to this huge deal, Patrick Mahomes also has a deal with Adidas. It's a 4-year deal worth $30.28 million and includes a 5th-year option and a signing bonus of $19.6 million. Those were my thoughts on Patrick Mahomes getting paid.
Yeah, and to your point being a team-friendly deal, we've seen quarterbacks you've never heard of sign crazy money every 2 to 3 years because that's the market for a quarterback.
I believe we've listed some of those guys on the show. And guys that have jobs that Colin Kaepernick doesn't have one, and these guys are getting paid.
They're getting paid. And to that point, that's what Deshaun Watson and Dak Prescott are doing, right? 2-3 year deals. As you see different deals come in, I know you're going to talk about it a little later, all of a sudden the market goes up and you start making way more. So I strongly believe that while this $45 million a year average looks crazy now, not even halfway through that deal, people are going to say, wait, only? Unless something changes in the NFL. But to switch gears a little bit, you know, once the deal came out, we started to look at, you know, what was the history of Patrick Mahomes? How did he get into the league? What were the thoughts on him before he was drafted? So we looked into what people were saying about him before the 2017 NFL draft. And there was an NFC scouting director, I have some ideas on what teams this could have been, but an NFC scouting director said about Patrick Mahomes, I just don't think he has the necessary qualities to be a quarterback. He has no vision, no mechanics, he's erratic as hell, and he makes a lot of mistakes. So this is what a scouting director, but this was one of the views out there in the NFC East. So
from the Giants. Did the Giants pass on Patrick Mahomes on it?
Well, I don't want to
tell me the Giants. I mean, I think,
but if you think about it, right, that's a reach. But let's talk about where he ranks after his first 31 games played in the league. 76 touchdowns, most ever. 9,412 passing yards, most ever. 108.9 QB rating, highest ever. 24 wins, tied for the most ever. He was the MVP of the league, a Super Bowl champion, and a Super Bowl MVP, right? So that's his resume. But let's take it one step further, right? So he hasn't been perfect, right? He does have 8 career losses. In those 8 career losses, Telly, 335.1 passing yards per game in those 8 losses, including one postseason loss. 8.6 yards per passing attempt. He's thrown 25 touchdowns to 6 interceptions in those 8 losses. He has a passer rating of 109.3 in those losses. And points per game in all of those games that he lost, averaging 31.3 points per game. So they lost 8 games. I don't think they lost them because of him.
No, that's definitely not because of him. Those are stellar numbers in losses. There's guys with wins that don't even have those numbers.
Exactly. So Patrick Mahomes, Telly, we talk about this all the time when it comes to professional athletes. My man's 24.
Yeah, age is more than a number in sports.
Old, right? But I think it's important to note, while he's making or is potentially making over $500 million, you can't compare it to the deal of baseball players like Mike Trout, who signed a 12-year, $426.5 million contract, right? Very different, right? Because Trout's money, all guaranteed. He will get that money one way or another. But when we look at Mahomes' contract, even though you see that $5.3 million number, only $141.4 million of that deal is guaranteed. And that's for injuries only. So if he gets injured and gets hurt, that's the total amount he would be paid out over that period of time. So kind of crazy. And really, when we think about this, you know, we talked about this last week. What does this do for Dak Prescott, Lamar Jackson, Deshaun Watson? Is this good? Is this bad? What is that going to play out for them? I think that I've seen and heard articles on both sides of that, on the coin on that. Could be good, could be bad, right? So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. But let's go into some of the details and maybe some of the terminology that we had talked about while we were looking over this contract.
Yeah, I think in one of those terms that came up definitely has been around, but it's not one that's been utilized, right, in the NFL. And I think an important point here is baseball money is guaranteed, basketball money is guaranteed. Those guys can have a car run over their foot. They're getting paid whether they play or not. Football is all tied to the game check, is all tied to being on the roster, is all tied to incentives, right? So this theme is guarantee mechanism. So one of the reasons Mahomes' deal is so unique beyond the length is that his yearly compensation guarantees in advance throughout the deal. So as the NFL Network's Tom Pelissero reported, his 2020 to 2022 base salaries and roster bonuses are guaranteed alongside his $10 million signing bonus when the deal is signed. So that's important. So his money through 2022 is guaranteed. his 2023 compensation guarantees in 2021, and his 2024 compensation guarantees in 2022. So you're a couple of years ahead, guaranteeing compensation for a few years ahead, which in sports is important because injury or the way that you perform can affect that dollar amount. Most of his 2025 compensation guarantees in 2023, with the remainder guaranteeing in 2024. After that, Mahomes' money guarantees 1 year in advance, with his 2026 compensation locking in place in 2025, 2027 compensation guaranteeing in 2026, onwards until 2030. The reason this was put in place and the reason this makes this part of the deal beneficial to Patrick Mahomes is because he knows he'll be on a team and he knows he'll be paid a year, 2 years, a few years in advance, where most guys, they're living year to year if they're on a one-year deal. We discussed that last week with Dak Prescott being franchised. But also to avoid situations like this, Amit, which I know in the baseball world doesn't happen, but most years of NFL contracts are not guaranteed, meaning that a veteran could theoretically make it all the way through the preseason before being cut, which also makes it near impossible to get a new job. As an example, Larry Warford's base salary of $7.7 million with the Saints wasn't guaranteed this season. The team was able to keep him on its roster throughout free agency, but once New Orleans drafted Cesar Ruiz in the first round, it no longer needed Warford, cut him in May, freeing up that $7.7 million. So that's the important part. Patrick Mahomes, at the beginning of the league year, will know whether or not he has a job, whether or not he has a check, whether or not he's on the team. If they don't want him and they cut him before the league year starts, he has all the offseason and before the draft to find a home. We talked about this last week with Cam Newton. They cut him. It was too late. Most teams made their moves already as far as quarterbacks, and it left them with very little options, and that's why he's getting paid $500,000 this year and can make up to $1.1 million. Well, getting $1.1 million can make up to $7 million this year, but it's all incentives. And so that's what makes that part really important. So guarantee mechanism. How does this affect Dak Prescott and Lamar Jackson? Well, I think it's more beneficial to their teams negotiating with them because they can tie them up for longer now, or at least dangle that longer contract out, which these guys don't want. These guys want the money and they want the number to reset so they can re-up. Patrick Mahomes said, "I want to be a Chief for life." It's an extremely team-friendly deal. He said a word that a lot of guys, other guys don't in the NFL. He said legacy on it. And this is a way to cement his legacy. What this deal does is guarantees he gets paid, doesn't put him at the top of the market every year, but guarantees that the team has flexibility so they can put weapons around him so they can go out and be competitive every year. And with Patrick Mahomes, he's going to be in conversation for the Super Bowl every single year.
Agreed. I think it makes perfect sense for Mahomes. It gives him that long-term stability. And it's some of the same things that we heard in baseball when Trout signed that deal with the Angels, right? Ton of money, guaranteed. And many people at the time said it was a discount for the team. But for him, it was security, safety. I'm here, I'm not going anywhere. The money is set. Yes, I could make more money if I got out of this contract a little earlier, but it just made sense for him. So I think this is an interesting move. We'll see if he actually plays the duration of that 10-year contract. I'll be surprised if it's not renegotiated at some point through there. But
yeah, and that brings us to the importance of 2025, Amit. Those guys, Dak Prescott's looking for a 4-year deal. Lamar Jackson's looking for a 3 to 4 year deal. When his rookie deal's up, the reason being TV deals and market reset. Those deals are likely to come after the league has doubled its television rights. We mentioned at the top, Magic Johnson signed a deal that sounded ludicrous at the time, and TV deals came in and it was worth very little compared to what it was when it was offered. So when the TV rights double, this means that they can exist in an environment where the cap is north of $300 million as opposed to the $198 million mark of where it is today, meaning contracts will start to skyrocket after the 2025 season, Don't be surprised if Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs renegotiate the deal after 2025 or 2026 season.
I don't doubt it, and we'll see. I mean, the NFL revenue was almost north of $14 billion last year. So we'll start to see, as those deals come in, you'll see the money skyrocket, and players are going to get a piece of it. For our final story today, we're talking about ESPN's backstory on The Decision.
The answer to the question everybody wants to know, LeBron, what's your decision?
In this fall, man, it's very tough. In this fall, I'm going to take my talents to South Beach and join the Miami Heat.
Miami Heat. That was the conclusion you woke up with this morning.
That was the conclusion I woke up with this morning.
For those of you that don't know, let's be honest. We all know about The Decision. If you've been a part of any sort of sports, you know what happened. Happened 10 years ago. It's about LeBron James choosing what team he was going to go to after his final contract expired with the Cleveland Cavaliers. So let's just jump into the takeaways.
Amit, huge shout out to John Van Natta, the producer, the director, the interviewer, for backstory, The Decision, who did, I thought, a tremendous job of basically walking us through not only his process, the decision backwards and forwards, and understanding how and why it took place. And also how he started before quarantining, and then he had to continue his work during quarantine, and he was able to get an interview from David Stern before he passed away. May he rest in peace.
Yeah, I mean, This brought up a lot of bad memories for me because, you know, as every year, the Knicks tell you everyone's coming to New York, and every year no one comes to New York. And when they do come to New York, they go to the Nets. So this brought, you know, I think everyone was rooting. If you remember back then, at that point, the Knicks had pretty much given away their entire team to open up cap space for him to come. So they had like D-League guys playing just to be able to have enough cap space to bring three superstars and specifically bring LeBron over. So, you know, when we look back at it, it was really, really cool to see how this was thought up, who thought it up, the process of getting there, and the impact it's had, not just on LeBron and on basketball, but in sports in general. So,
yeah, you thought it was Knicks for a hot minute, and actually LeBron did too. And I read a story that it was going to be the Knicks until the Knicks tripped all over themselves during the process of bringing him in to tell them about the opportunity.
Yeah.
And then he decided not to go with the Knicks. That's for another day.
I don't want to talk about it.
What I didn't realize, Amit, LeBron was only 25 when the decision happened. I had forgotten that he was that young. And if you think about it, I mean, that's a few years out of college. I know he didn't go to college, but that's only a few years out of college. For him, he had already been in the league so long, I think I forgot he was that young. It represented a shift in the balance of power, basically. And in 2006, according to Chris Broussard, LeBron said, quote, "I'm not going to chase rings," because he had the attitude that he thought that winning was automatic. He was going to be able to come into the league and do it. And when it wasn't happening, I think that's kind of what prompted him to make a decision in free agency. And then we pick up there with whose idea it was.
Yeah. So, you know, this whole time we're sitting there thinking this is LeBron and his boys' thought. Like they came up with this genius idea to have this 1 hour special and pretty much completely, and I, you know, shit the bed on this one. I mean, this was a travesty of primetime television on ABC, right? Like, nothing good happened in this hour, and the optics were terrible. But tell me, who was the mastermind behind this idea? Who was it? Who was it?
Who Bill was it? Simmons, the same guy responsible for 30 for 30s, which we love. But man, Bill Simmons was behind this. It was crazy to me.
Bill Simmons, he got a fan suggestion, thought it was a great idea, and started pitching it to everyone. He was pitching it to ESPN. He was pitching it to LeBron and his team. I mean, this guy was all on board with it, right? This was like, hey, I'm going to produce this. We're going to do this. LeBron and his team love the 30 for 30s. Let's get it going. Let's make this incredible thing. And then just disappears.
Did he break off this fan? Not only did he disappear, Amit, which he needs to pay that fan. Not only did he disappear, he reneged. And they show an interview of him talking about this was a travesty. And one of the worst things he has ever seen happen, someone ripping away from their childhood team or where they grew up's team. And it was in the same documentary, in the same piece, they showed an email that Bill Simmons wrote talking about LeBron loves it, his team loves it, and they love me. So we're definitely going to make this happen. And then he writes an article about how horrible this was.
Yeah, it was very weird. And now we know. Now we know the origin of the idea. And it was interesting to see how, you know, Commissioner Stern didn't like this, and he wanted ESPN to shut it down for the main reason that he felt that the players had too much power. This was LeBron taking charge. This was him making a decision and essentially putting the players in charge of the destiny of the league and not the league. And he was not a fan of that at all at the time.
Yeah, and I think what was strange is, like, you make, we work on this podcast and a lot of work goes into it. Beyonders, a lot of work. We read articles, we collaborate, we write what we want to. We have a rough outline of what we want to talk about and we execute on it. LeBron and his boys asked for an hour of time and they didn't have anything scripted on it. They asked for Jim Gray, who had nothing to do with ESPN. Nobody at ESPN wanted Jim Gray to do it. They wanted Stuart Scott, which I thought that would have been pretty cool. Or they wanted one of their other, Bob Lee. Does their deep E60 pieces. Okay. But they won't, that was a non-negotiable for LeBron and his team to have Jim Gray, and then no script. So Jim Gray's literally up there asking, like, what'd you have for breakfast this morning? How'd you wake up? Did you sleep okay? Okay. Who knows about the decision? How many people know? Five people? Three people? And it was the most awkward television time to, like, not have anything planned and ask ESPN and ABC for an hour of time and have nothing, zero written down or pre-scripted, because you're not going to get on, ask for an hour and get on there and say, hey, here's my team, peace out, and drop the mic.
But here's the thing, right? So they still had 100 million people tune into it. It is still to this day the highest rated and watched TV studio show that ESPN's ever put up. And at the time of when he was about to announce, they had over 13 million people watching. So as terrible as it was all put together, and the production quality was subpar, and the optics were terrible, and it was very awkward and uncomfortable to watch, everyone still tuned in.
Of course, I don't think anybody was tuning in for the production value.
But to your point, they tuned in for what? They tuned in to hear him say, I'm taking my talents to South Beach. And this is what blew my mind, Telly. He is not the first NBA athlete to make an announcement that had that phrase in it. Who but none other than Kobe Bean Bryant, may he rest in peace.
Rest in peace.
Said the same exact thing when he made his decision to not go to college and go to the NBA. In fact, he said, I'm taking my talents to the NBA. He waited for a second, really played it up. I'm taking my talents. You see that smile that he has looking around, taken to the, I did not know that he had said that first. I had never seen the clips. I didn't even know that was a thing.
I didn't either, but I think here's the big difference, right, Amit? That announcement by Kobe, he was smirking, he was smiling, he was having fun. And when you say, I'm taking my talents, I think he was talking about jumping to the next level to get paid off of my talents. I think the difference is, if you look at LeBron, I'm taking my talents, there's no smile, There's no smirk. There's no joy. Also, your decision is going to crush like the rest of the country, except South Beach, except Miami and Miami Heat fans. And that's the difference. Kobe's decision didn't affect anybody, but like, okay, a couple colleges that thought they might have a chance at getting him. So it was good news he was delivering to everybody. I'm taking my talents to the NBA. Everybody can watch me on TV now. I'm great. And LeBron in Connecticut, which is close to Ohio regionally, basically announcing, close to New York and New York Knicks fans, which were there, close to Boston and Boston Celtic fans who were there, close to all these teams regionally. It's not like he made the announcement in Florida in nice, friendly territory. He basically made this announcement in enemy territory. By the way, peace out. He also didn't thank the fans of Cleveland. I love Cleveland. This was a hard decision. He said, I'm going to take my talents. Jim Gray says, you woke up like this? And he said, yep, I woke up like this.
Yeah, and I mean, look, the production was not ideal, and the optics weren't great, and the scripting or the lack of scripting definitely hurt him. But for what it's worth, it definitely opened up a brand new era for athletes in general, in terms of the narrative that they do, the power that they have. This was a star in the league pretty much dictating what he was going to do and how it was going to impact how the league ran, right? And, you know, for what it's worth, we've seen how this has impacted how athletes in general have become the storytellers of their own narrative, right? We see various, you know, they've got their own channels, they've got their own podcasts, they've got their own, you know, Instagram channels, all of that to be in control of the narrative and of their story and to share what they want to share. It may not be the best way, right? The production value isn't always amazing, but they get to share their story and kind of flex their power that they have in their positions in the league. And that was not something that we had seen before this moment. And it's something that we've seen really expand. If you look at where we're at today, right now, you've seen it expand across the league, across all leagues. And you're seeing, you know, people utilize their voice in prime time in a very different way.
Yeah, and I think one thing that this piece touched on, was how whites and blacks saw this different. White America and Black America saw this very differently. And I think you and I both had this in our notes after watching it. But basically the fact that Black America saw it as a form of taking control. And as you mentioned, control of the narrative, control of the story, and, you know, having the control to tell our story to the audience in some way. And where White America saw it as maybe a loss of control. And maybe not necessarily White America, that's maybe a little strong, but David Stern, who's the commissioner of the league, right, is handing over the power to a player that he oversees. An owner of a team is handing over a power to a player who he, you know, oversees, or a coach. And nobody knew the answer to this question, right? Like this special, like, Chris Bosh made the decision to go to Miami, and he didn't even know if LeBron was going to Miami. So nobody really knew what the answer to this question was.
And it wasn't handing over the power. It was that they didn't have the power. There was nothing Dan Gilbert could do. Nothing Howard Stern, David Stern could do. They were in a position where they no longer were in the driver's seat. And I think that was jarring. And you saw that in Dan Gilbert's statement, right? Because he came across as like an angry child that lost a game.
Ooh, that was an interesting piece. The Comic Sans choice was very interesting.
Greatest font ever.
Also, the fact that he sent it out so quick, Amit, because on the plane, LeBron was having second thoughts. And after he made the announcement, which I didn't realize, if you see, he looks like he's about to cry. Okay, so there might be a slight tiny chance he decides to stay with Cleveland when he sees the jerseys burning and stuff. But Dan Gilbert's email definitely put a seal on that coffin. He was gone.
Yeah, because he saw that when he landed. He landed in Miami and saw that in the car as he's leaving the plane, and that sealed it. That sealed the deal. Because yeah. There was an inkling of, oh, well, maybe I didn't think this through. Maybe that's not the right move. And you could see that it was definitely a tough and emotional move for him. So it was it was cool to see the background. It was cool to see the backstory. I'm glad that I now know that Bill Simmons is the architect of all of this. And we've seen the lasting impact it's had on athletes' voices. And we'll continue to see how those voices play out in the public and national arena.
Yeah, I think another piece, you know, we just saw the Last Dance 10-part documentary on the life of Michael Jordan and the Chicago Bulls. And you see the stark differences, right? I feel like the team admitted, LeBron's team admitted to messing this up, basically fumbling on this, not choosing the right wording. You know, taking my talents was a bit insensitive, especially he's from Cleveland, he's from Ohio. People saw it as a betrayal. I'm sure he would take that back if they could. The word choice there, not having it scripted, but his team was learning on the fly. And something I thought of as I watched this last night was Michael Jordan was so much more professional and polished, right, versus LeBron. But I had to take a step back. Michael went to college. And Michael grew up in a very different environment in a different home versus LeBron came straight from high school and his boys also. So they didn't have the education, the backing there of like, wait, let's think this through. Let's plan this out. And that's a big piece of it.
And age. Age is big, man. Look, Jordan entered the league at 22.
I think he was 21 or 22.
Yeah. LeBron is in the league for 7 years at age 25.
Yeah.
So you grow up differently. So that's a great insight on that. And it's been interesting to see how he has, LeBron that is, progressed with his voice. And unlike Jordan, he has been very, very vocal and very, very open about all of his thoughts, beliefs, and has doubled down and standing for a lot of things that I think athletes in the past have kind of shied away from. And I think he's opened the door for a lot of guys to stand next to him.
Yeah, where in Jordan's time, you probably couldn't.
Exactly.
And there was no social media.
Exactly.
Great piece, highly recommend it. We both enjoyed it a tremendous amount. Shouts out to John Van Natta.
Great job.
As bad as it was a total innovation. The press called it stupid, ill-advised, selfish, conceited, dumb. Worst of all, I felt like I destroyed LeBron's image and totally failed my best friend. Underneath all that criticism, it was very clear that athletes should be in power. They have something to say and must be heard.
Let's wrap this thing up. For our first story, we covered our Mahomie and yours, Patrick Mahomes, his major payday, and the implications his $503 million contract has for him and the league going forward. And for our final story, on the 10-year anniversary of LeBron's decision, we discussed Don Van Natta Jr.'s backstory, the decision. And we apologize, Don, because I said John twice in the piece, but it is Don Van Natta, our friend, who has tweeted at us. And LeBron deciding to broadcast, taking his talents to South Beach, the origin, the backlash, and the change it's caused in the sports landscape. Thank you for going beyond the numbers with us. We're a weekly podcast dedicated to going beyond the numbers of sports and life to bring you the story within the story of the stories that matter. We're available on all major podcasting platforms, including Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts. Whatever you're listening on now, please be sure to click the follow or subscribe button to get our latest content.
And remember, you can find us on Instagram, Beyond the Numbers Podcast, and on Twitter, at Beyond TN Podcast.
Until next time, peace!